This is the Dairy Brothers Tribecast, a podcast for diehard Cleveland Indians fans, presented to you by WaitingForNextYear.com. Now, here are the hosts, Matt and Todd Dairy.
Welcome back, everybody. Dairy Brothers Tribecast on a Monday. Big week ahead for the fellas as they head to Chicago and Cincinnati. A sweep this weekend of the unnamed team. Matt and Todd with you on WaitingForNextYear.com. It is the Dairy Brothers Tribecast after a fun weekend. Todd, you were at the ballpark yesterday. I can't wait to hear some of these stories. If you were listening on the radio or watching on TV like I was, you could hear the heckling going on and some drunks going crazy. But we're so much to get into, Todd, after the Indians take care of the team in Detroit. And now, 5-3, all alone in first place. A fun weekend, but still better baseball to be played, for sure.
Let's talk about your first place, Cleveland Indians.
There you go.
All you suckers out there lost the first two to Detroit.
Kyle, calm down.
Oh, we're not even going to make it to 500 this year.
Oh, geez.
It's a marathon, not a sprint, fuckers.
Okay? Whoa! Man, you shot out of a cannon. That's good.
I'm riled up because you want to know something? I've watched every pitch of the season thus far. Honestly, I've watched every pitch. And
who hasn't?
My take, who hasn't? A lot of people, considering the attendance numbers. What is it, the old Harry Doyle? In case you haven't noticed, and judging by the attendance, you haven't.
That in this TV controversy with the networks,
YouTube and TV, yeah, it's a real problem. Absolutely, we can. I was over at a friend's house the other night, sitting in his beautiful outdoor patio area with a television. Shout out to the great Arvin, and we were
starving Arvin.
It was Friday night. It was like 7 o'clock, and Brooke yells, "Hey Arvin, can you turn the Indians game on?" And he turns to me, "I got some bad news. I got YouTube TV, and I can't get the games." And I'm like, "What? That is awful." So he's explaining to me all this stuff. So the long and the short of it is, I have Spectrum, and I have the Spectrum app, and he has a Fox Sports Go on his Apple TV. So we went to the Fox Sports Go app and signed in on my account, and we were going to the sweet sounds of Matt Underwood, Rick Manning, and Andre Knott. So yeah, so it was all good.
Well, the Tribe play from in front. Oh, baby, he's Johnny on the spot.
the good news is that they swept the unnamed team this weekend. I thought they played pretty clean baseball, and say what you want. Your baseball team is a first-place team. We got a long way to go. But the way I see it, the way I've watched this team pitch this over the first eight games, this team's is here to stay. They're not going anywhere, man. They are staying at the top of that division or near the top of that division all season long. I truly believe it. And I say that also judging off of what I know of the rest of the teams in this division.
Well, I mean, by the way, we are brought to you by the Center for Advanced Dentistry, Dr. Ben Hornstein, and BreakingT.com. There's a lot to kind of dive into. Certainly the offense had its moments during the first week, plus where you went, oh my gosh, are we ever going to score any runs? This is terrible. It's the same guys having to hit. The center field position sucks. The first base position sucks. Shortstop's not hitting. So there was all of that. And then you get to the weekend, and yes, it's when you're facing, Derek Holland and Jose Ureña and guys like that, I think Skubal's going to be pretty decent for that team eventually, but the Indians certainly racked him around the other night. It's a tough judge. This week you're going to see Lucas Giolito, and we'll get into that, and Lance Lynn, and so there's going to be some better pitching that the Indians are going to face this week. But you're right, Todd, you win in this sport with pitching and defense. Yes, and timely hitting. Franmil Reyes has provided a lot of timely hits. The Indians all of a sudden are like this home run team this year, and the numbers have pointed out when they lead the league in home runs or they start off fast, they do well, and and they go on long runs in the playoffs, which is a weird stat. And I think Zach Meisel had it yesterday. But so far, you're right. I mean, when it comes down to it, these arms, these young arms and this young rotation continue to blossom. Logan Allen has shown over the first couple of starts, whether it's Kansas City and Detroit or not, that he can get people out, and that's what it's about, and it works, and that's been the Indians' philosophy, and so far it's through eight games it's worked.
Yeah, and it's been the first couple games against the Tigers, and I went over this last week, but those were kind of boring, I won't lie. But again, the first game was the opener was snowing and cold, and that April weather.
It was freezing.
Yeah, it was no good. And I gave you props on the podcast. I said, I don't know how you did it and sat through that garbage, but you did it. And you're my hero. But they looked a lot more competent after that first series. The next two series against the Royals and the Tigers here in Cleveland, the at-bats were better. It seems like Tito has a better handle on where he wants to go. It's very interesting with the lineup. It's very interesting because, sometimes you'll go 2 weeks without seeing a left-handed starter. And it's the Indians have faced more left-handers than right-handers by far. And again, coming up this week, there's three left-handers coming up. So it's given, and I talked about this last week, it's given Tito the opportunity to give Yu Chang more at-bats than Jake Bowers and to give Jordan Luplo more at-bats than Ben Gamel, and to put Ahmed Rosario out in center field a couple times to get his feet wet. So I like the way things have gone this especially this week in those series against the Royals and the Tigers at home.
And yesterday was a prime example where you saw the unnamed team, and they're pathetic, and they've been pathetic, and they will remain pathetic as long as their pathetic general manager is sitting in his chair. They don't have any talent. And on top of that, yeah. And on top of that, their right fielder, who probably shouldn't even be on the team, who's just a hanger on in Mazzara, is throwing the baseball all over the diamond. Whereas with the Indians, for the most part, other than the opener when they didn't have to hit the cutoff man on the Jacoby Jones double, which pissed me off, and there was one other play that they, and Jimenez airmailed a throw.
I was going to say the 11th, we were up 11-1 when he made the error.
Yeah, Jimenez airmailed a throw. Other than that, the Indians have played, like you said, very solid, fundamental baseball defensively. They've turned every double play. How many times did this weekend the Indians hit into a double play that the unnamed team couldn't turn because their 4-6-3 or 6-4-3 stinks? Whereas if there's a ball hit to Cesar, he goes to Jimenez. That thing is turned. Guys hit cutoff men. Guys made plays. Ahmed Rosario got tested very early. Was it Saturday night? Friday night when a ball, when he had a bad read on it, but he made the play. We'll see how that goes this week in Chicago and Cincinnati and some more unfamiliar territory for him in center field. But pitching and defense is so important. And with Tito at the helm and with this staff, I think that they're catching the baseball, and that's good. And that's still going to be a concern because Rosario in left field is not a gold glover by any stretch, and certainly Josh Naylor in right doesn't have the great wheels, but, and first base has been okay defensively. But that's how this team is going to have to win because, like you said, until we maybe get a Daniel Johnson up here or a Bobby Bradley up here and the lineup lengthens a little bit, I still think this team is going to struggle to score some runs. I mean, Jose Ramirez bailed them out on Wednesday afternoon. I mean, if he doesn't hit the two home runs, there's no offense that whole series against the Royals. But that's how special Jose is.
Absolutely. You're 100% right. You don't need to tell me. I was there. It was beautiful. Jose Ramirez is, the guy is a freaking god, okay? The fact that he has the contract that he has, if you were another agent and there was a player that you were trying to sign and you were up against Jose Ramirez's, I got to believe he's fired that guy by now. But how does he live with himself knowing that he basically cost his client at least, low end $50 million. And I don't want to bring him up because of the moratorium, but Jose Ramirez is a superior player to the redacted ex-shortstop.
There it is.
And And again, you tell me the last time that the redacted ex-shortstop of this team had two home runs and basically amounted to the entire offense and won a game for the team. It hadn't happened in about 3 years.
Well, we're also losing the game when Ramirez hit the two-run homer. Then Karinchak gave up the run to tie, and then Ramirez hits the go-ahead home run in that same game. So it wasn't just like he had a couple of bombs in an 8-1 game. That was down 2-1. He made it 3-2. Or 1-0, and then 2-2, he made it 4-2. That's pretty impressive.
He didn't pull a Brooke Jacoby, hit solo homers when you're down 10-2 in the eighth inning.
That's a good call. That's a great call.
You know, and it's funny because the other day when I was at the game, you know, Dad, as you know, one of his famous lines at Indians games when Brooke Jacoby would come up because he couldn't stand him, what would he say when Brooke would come up with men on the base?
All right, he would say, "Come on, Brookie, get lucky."
That's right. And I said, Jake Bowers came up the other day. I yelled with two on, and I was like, "Come on, Jake, get lucky." Yeah.
Can we have a conversation about Jake Bowers?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Let's dive right in.
I mean, he's god awful. God, I think he had a decent at bat. I'm trying to remember which game it was, and
yesterday he hit a line shot to short that was right.
I don't know about a line shot. I mean,
it was.
I don't think it was hit that.
I am not a Bowers defender, but he did make it to the majors. He is capable of hitting a line drive at somebody one time.
He did hit a home run in that exhibition game against Arizona a couple weeks ago. I mean, and that poor guy, there's only so much longer he can go on this roster. Let's be honest.
I said to you and the executive producer, Jeremy, today, I think he's got 45 games in him to get it
together. No way. They're going to pull the plug a lot quicker than that.
I'm talking about 45 team games, not 45 games of his. Did you notice, by the way, and Ags actually brought this up, Bowers played against the lefty this weekend, I believe, they gave him an at bat late in the game against the lefty, and I think it was.
He played against Derek Holland because he was in the lineup, and then they scratched Teheran at the last minute.
So yeah, but they left Bowers in there, and Alex texted me. He's like, "I don't understand why they're playing why they would leave Bowers in there," and my explanation is, I still believe that Tito doesn't want anything to do with him, and he's given him enough rope to hang himself, essentially. Do you know what I mean? He wants to show that he's not a good player, and listen, I've given him Chris and Mike, this is the guy you want, this is the guy you're going to get, and watch him until you can't watch him anymore. And, I mean, I will say, and you and I talked about this before, Yu-Chang looks really good at first base. I mean, Yu-Chang is not the long-term solution at first, but he's handled the position and his bat a hell of a lot better than I anticipated him doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he needs a chance, and certainly first base is not his natural position. He's a middle infielder, but getting his bat in the lineup, he delivered a very, very key hit in the win last Sunday. And he's hit the ball pretty hard. I mean, he's not lighting the world on fire, but,
but he's doing his job.
Is he a better option than Jake Bowers? Yes. I think the Bilski brothers are better options than Jake Bowers.
I will say this. With facing all these lefties, Tito's done a nice job of mixing and matching everyone. Everybody's fresh, if you think about it. In years past, there's always been a guy who's been on the roster who, like Yu Chang, he'd be on the team and he wouldn't play for 2 weeks last year, or, you know, whatever it might be, you know, utility man, just wouldn't get in. Everybody has played pretty much, and everybody has stayed fresh. Oh,
everybody but one person.
Well, that's Phil Maton.
I mean, it's almost like, wait, Uncle Phil, is he on the team? The poor guy can't get into a game.
Has he really not made an appearance yet?
I'm pretty sure he hasn't.
I can't remember. You said that the other day in text. He had to have come in once.
No,
right?
I don't think he's pitched in any game. Look it up while I'm talking. I'm pretty sure he has not made an appearance because Oliver Perez has only made one appearance.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. I'm looking it up, so we'll keep talking.
But, I mean, here's the thing. They're going to need to play everybody this week because they're going to Cincinnati for the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So with the pitcher hitting and pinch hitting and all that crap and double steal or double switches, all these guys are going to have to play. So that'll be good. I give Tito a lot of credit, too, because they've had all these off days. You know, they play Monday for the opener, then they had the rain day Tuesday just in case. Then they played Wednesday. Then they were off on Thursday with another team coming in on Friday. So it's been difficult to kind of get into a groove. There should be no arguments now by guys not getting into a groove because they're playing every day this week, and they're going right from the unnamed series to the White Sox tonight. So that'll be good.
Tom, by the way, has made one appearance, and he faced one batter. And I remember it was
what?
He came in. Yes, he came in. It was the he came in for a starter. It was like I can't remember what it was, but I see he's made one appearance, pitched one third of it.
Really? I don't remember it. I don't remember him pitching at all.
I'll go in a game log, but
I forgot that he even pitched. So yes, everybody's gotten in.
But to the bigger question about Phil Maton is, you and I both expected him to make a big leap, and that this was going to be a big year for him, and he has not. I mean, listen, April 3rd was his one appearance in Detroit, one third of an inning. That's it. He hasn't pitched since April 3rd. Today's April 12th. So it's been 9 days. It's, you know, now you understand why you don't remember it.
Here's the other thing. We all knew this was coming, and this is not anything that's breaking news. Excuse me, but Tito's affinity for Brian Shaw is obvious. I mean, Friday night, high leverage spot, 4-run lead, but still 7th, 8th inning, whatever it was. He brought Shaw in. Yesterday, same thing. Had a lead, 6th inning, and he brought Shaw in. So,
absolutely, and which points to he has jumped Maton, because going into spring training,
at least so far,
you and I both thought that Maton would be the guy, along with Class A Whitgren and Karinchak, as the four big high leverage arms in the bullpen.
Man, well, I'll say this. I mean, I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on Jake Bowers, the rollovers to second, Tom Hamilton. Tom Hamilton was on this podcast weeks ago, and he didn't rip Jake Bowers, but he basically said, look, how much more do we need to see? And then people are telling us, oh, you should hear Hammy talk about Jake Bowers on the radio. Isn't that so refreshing to have announcers that tell it like it is? It's so great.
Yeah, it's just, you know what? Let me read the text, and then I want to mention, speaking of announcers, yesterday I was at the game, so I didn't obviously get to listen, but Bowers came up, and there was two on and one out, and he ended up hitting a ground ball, and I believe I think he's a run scored, right?
Yes, first and third. It was first and third,
yeah,
one out.
First and third. It says, Tom Hamilton's call on that play, quote, the good news is Bauer hit the ball so poorly, they weren't able to turn the double play. Damn, it's friggin' best.
Oh, my gosh.
So but to your point about the announcers, earlier this week, the Mets, or last week, I mean, the Mets won the game, and if you didn't see it, it was the bases loaded. I don't know how many outs there were. Tie game.
One out.
Ninth inning,
One
out in the ninth inning. And Michael Conforto of the Mets basically leaned in and took a strike, but it glanced off his elbow and he made no effort to move. And the umpires ended up saying, hit by a pitch, game's over. And the Mets announcing team of Gary Cohen, Keith Hernandez, and Ron Darling, who did the complete opposite of anything you would ever hear from any other announced team, basically were saying, this is a travesty. He was hit by a pitch. The umpires blew it. Everything but be homers. And it was so refreshing to hear. It was basically like a national call of a local team. And you don't get that anymore.
No, you rarely do. And, you know, I spent the weekend obviously watching us play. And because I live here in Michigan, I was listening to the home feed, and, you know, just I'm trying to be nice here, but, you know, just listening to, oh, Robbie Grossman's a grinder, and oh, another walk for Robbie Grossman in the dugout. It's like, geez, I mean.
Oh, you mean, hey, Rex Grossman's your dad, according to the loser drunks next to me yesterday?
That's what they were saying. I could hear the wooing all weekend.
Different times he came up. Where's your dad, Rex Grossman? Oh, 20 beers and act like dickheads.
Was that? I mean, you were tweeting it out, and you were very upset. It just was it that bad? Because there's nothing worse than you're right, and because we're spaced out, we're distancing. There's only so many people that are allowed even in the stadium. Not that the Indians are going to put 25,000 yet in the stadium, but even if there was no pandemic. But it just seemed like, these drunks in your section. I mean, why act like that?
Here's basically what it was. I am in my section. The section to my left, there were, and probably three rows behind me, were four 20-something drunk buffoons who didn't shut up. And then about two innings after them, one section over to my right and about two rows in front of me were four other drunken 20-something buffoons who decided they wanted to be as funny as the other guys. Like, Daniel Norris was pitching, and the guy kept going, "No show, Norris." Like, how is that funny? It's not funny the first time, but when you hear it the 20th time, it's really not funny. But it was driving me and your nephew insane to the point where it was ruining. Like, but the thing is, when there's only 7,000 people in the stands and everyone's spread out, it's quiet. So you can hear everything. If someone wants to be a loudmouth buffoon, you're going to hear it. And these guys didn't stop. Like, they disappeared to get more beers, probably like the sixth inning. And it was like a real pleasure. And they came back and they're like, "Don't call it a comeback. Let's go. We're back. We see you. 3-3. You know, whatever. They're yelling numbers. Oh, my God. I just...
Where's Annie? Where's Annie? Can you get Annie and to wave her down and be like, get these guys under control?
The thing is, they weren't swearing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They were annoying. They weren't like cussing and, you know, being whatever. They were just being drunken idiots. And like,
right,
I'm not gonna.
Right.
Plus, do I need to like
start a fight?
Yeah.
No. Right.
With my son there and.
No, but it is annoying. It was like Game 7 for us in 2016 with the amount of drama in our section and the shouting at each other and the gloating in the front row, and it was just the whole game. We were like babysitting.
Yeah, well, that was. I don't ever need to discuss those buffoons again either. But I don't understand why someone thinks it's funny in a quiet stadium to act that way. You want to cheer for your team like I do when we score runs and stand up and, you know, yell, you know, for my fine. But
right,
the
right,
taunting
right.
of the Tigers on a Sunday in April is just, it just grow the fuck up, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah. And Kirk Gibson said on the Tiger broadcast yesterday, he goes, "You hear those hecklers?" Because they're not, they were broadcasting from Michigan. They weren't even on the road trip. So they're in a studio, which most road teams are doing until COVID gets under control. But they were even saying, "You hear those hecklers?" And Gibby made a funny line. He said, "Yeah, they have an audience in their head, and that's about it." So, which he was right about. Other than, you know, going through his genuflecting of Robbie Grossman, what a leader in the clubhouse. But when you talk about players being good in the clubhouse or good in the dugout, you know what that means? That means they can't play.
That good.
Right. That means you don't have
like Adam Plutko.
Right.
Great guy.
Right. Such a leader. Meantime, he's a fifth starter swing reliever. So long man. Yeah. But that did not seem fun for you yesterday. You could
like fun it is. Yeah. To be honest, it borderline ruined the experience for me. You know, I just whatever. It's not worth discussing anymore. I just for the life of me, I can't understand it. And what's interesting is I tweeted it out. And, like, I texted you, and I texted a couple other people, and everybody could hear it on television.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't miss it.
Matt and Todd with you, Dairy Brothers Tribecast on waitingfornextyear.com. Let's talk about this bullpen and what is standing out, because there's something that the Indians haven't had in a long time that's actually there. But first, Todd is going to tell us about Dr. Ben Hornstein, the Center for Advanced Dentistry. Did you send was it the selfie? Was that a couple weeks ago when you two were taking pictures?
Me and Doc?
Yeah.
No, that was a long time ago.
Was it? I feel like it was yesterday.
It was my last visit before my last visit. That was like last October.
Rontober?
Regardless, if you want the cleanest teeth that you could possibly have, if you have any sort of dental crown or a cracked tooth or whatever you need, and you want someone with steady hands, very gentle, and someone who's going to make you laugh while doing it, you got to visit Dr. Ben Hornstein and his partner, Dr. Sean Schlessel, at the Center for Advanced Dentistry. There's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can check out their website with the beautiful smiling photos of those two handsome devils themselves at cfad.net, or you could call them at 216-595-1710 and tell them the Dairy Brothers sent you. They're in Beechwood, right off of Chagrin Boulevard in Orange Place, off the Chagrin Boulevard exit. If you, again, anything you need in terms of dentistry, they got you covered. They love Cleveland sports. They love the Cleveland baseball team just like we do. So please, check them out. Again, cfad.net, or give them a call at 216-595-1710, the Center for Advanced Dentistry, and tell them the Dairy Brothers sent you. Now, Matt, let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
When you were just on your vacation last week, did you bring any Breaking Tea Tribe t-shirts with you?
I did. I had the Styx Tristan McKenzie shirt on and popping in beautiful South Carolina last week. And, yeah, I love their shirts. If you go to BreakingTea.com/dairy, you can see all the Browns, Cavs, Indians gear. The Cavs, by the way, the other night I looked up, I think the Toronto Raptors had 90 points at halftime. So at least the tankathon is on back in Cleveland. There's no more better early April tradition than the Indians in first place and the basketball team tanking. So if you want the Jarrett Allen Fro shirt, you can get it at BreakingTea.com. You also can get the Indian stuff, the Jose Ramirez shirt, the Plesac shirt, the McKenzie shirt. I love it. And the best thing, Todd, about these shirts is they're very comfortable. They're soft.
Very soft.
So I love the soft shirt. I've worn it a couple times. I've washed it a couple times. It has not shrunk. Breaking Tea shirts, they got everything you want. If you're a Brown, like I said, Browns, Cavs, Indians fan, or you want anything else, anything that's hot, like Joe Musgrove throws a no-hitter, boom, they've got a shirt out the next day. You know, if the Browns sign, what's his name, Clowney, they'll make a Clowney shirt, and they'll do it fast, and that's what they do at BreakingTea.com. Throw the /dairy in there, and then put TribeCast10 in when you're ordering for 10% off at BreakingTea.com.
All right. Before we move on, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Two questions, actually. One, do they have a Dean Wade t-shirt? Because if so, I'm getting it. Question number two, do you dry your t-shirts?
Yeah.
What is this, amateur hour? Of course they're going to shrink. Dude,
Not breaking tees, they don't.
You can't dry t-shirts, man. You got to go drying rack on those.
I used to hang them up back in the day.
I dry rack all my t-shirts.
Really? Oh yeah, that's true. I have been in your office when you've been when you've had the rack.
You know how it is over here on Fridays when there's the drying racks full of clothing because I refuse to dry anything. Okay, sorry.
That's funny.
Let's get back on topic.
No, that's good. That's a good topic actually. Do you dry your shirts? I know we cold wash everything. That I know. Because sometimes if you warm wash, it could shrink there.
That I did not know. I just go by whatever is going down. So, and I'm the laundry man in this house. So there you go.
How about that? Look at you. What's up? Yeah. What about Emmanuel Clase? Manny. Oh, my God. This guy. The Indians have always had pretty good bullpens. And it's one thing that I know Cernanetti, they take pride in. And you go back to the pen, you know, of years past with Andrew Miller and Shaw and Cody Allen. But, man, we got some guys throwing hard at the end of that, at the end of games. Karinchak's hitting 98, 99. Class A, 101. That's a game changer, Todd. It really is.
Well, I liked it yesterday. It's actually this weekend kind of visualized for us what we're going to see. From the bullpen. It seems, you know, I know that Whitgren got the first save chance, but in the game that he pitched, Class A came on in the eighth because they were in the middle of the order, the heart of the order. I think what he wants to do with his three big relievers being Nick Whitgren, James Karinchak, and Emmanuel Clase is, I think he wants Clase to face the toughest guys, you know, the 3-4-5 or whatever it might be, or 1-2, whatever it might be, 1-2-3. Karinchak would be in front of him, and then Whitgren would kind of face the, you know, the bottom of the order, I guess you would say. So, like, yesterday, it came back around, and it was the sixth inning, Brian Shaw came in, threw a seven-pitch inning, 96 with his cutters. It was beautiful. I mean, I got to give the guy credit. But Whitgren came on to face the bottom of the order, and the way it was supposed to work out, assuming that Karinchak didn't end up walking someone, which he ended up doing, is that the middle of the order was when Class A was going to come in. I don't think you can argue with the fact that this guy's got to be the closer. He is, he's throwing 85% of his pitches are 100 or 101 miles per hour. It's unbelievable. And he looks untouchable. If he's in the zone, forget it. I mean, this is the most dominant looking reliever that we've had since Andrew Miller. I mean, Karinchak had some really good moments last year, but then he had some down moments, and we always know that he's always one wild streak away from imploding. You know, yesterday was a prime example. He came in, and he immediately walked the first guy he faced, and then he struck out the side. But it got, he needed to get to 3-2 with the second batter, so you kind of never know what you're going to get with him. But I am blown away by Emmanuel Clase, and this is why you can never judge one of these trades when you get a younger pitcher back, you know, immediately. Because I remember in June and July of last year, even though the Kluber had pitched one inning, the entire fan base was going, oh, we got ripped off. We should have gotten more for Kluber. Well, you potentially have your closer for the next 6 years, and Kluber pitched one inning for the Rangers last year. So I love him. I don't know about you.
He's fantastic, and he basically is throwing 80% fastballs because the other team can't hit him. Now, again, right. I want to see how he does in a save opportunity in Chicago or Cincinnati, a couple of band boxes this week against real offenses. No offense to what the Indians have seen already, but let's be honest here. That's such a 4A team that they played this weekend. Minus their big meal ticket guy who pretty much is finished anyway, and Miguel Cabrera. But now let's see how he does against the heart of the order of the White Sox, or against Castellanos, Suarez, and, you know, apparently Tyler Naquin, some big star in Cincinnati. I picked him up on my NL only team this week.
I don't want to get into a whole thing about Tyler Naquin either, but like the fans.
Hey, good for him.
Good for him, I agree. But the fans, if I have to see one more tweet of, well, of course we got rid of Tyler Naquin because we didn't want to pay him.
I know.
No one wanted him. He signed February 15th, for God's sake.
I know. He was with us for years. People wanted him gone after game six of 2016.
You mean your brother?
Oh, man. By the way, you mentioned cutter. Brian Shaw throws the cut fastball. Did you know that Kid Cudi, do you know who that is?
Yes.
He was on Saturday Night Live that night.
Pursuit of Happiness.
He was on
the Jams. He's Cleveland's own, dude.
I didn't realize.
I know who he is. He's from Cleveland.
Well, I didn't realize he was from Cleveland, let alone went to Shaker Heights High and got kicked out and ended up at Solon. Did you know that?
That I did not know.
Yeah. Because we're watching we usually watch Sunday mornings. We usually on DVR check out Saturday Night Live. And I think that show is terrible, but my wife loves it. And so, you know, she sits through how many Indians games with me. So we're watching Kid Cudi. And she's like, oh, did you know this guy? She was looking him up. And she's like, he's from Cleveland. I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, he went to Shaker Heights High School and graduated from Solon. I'm like, how about that?
Let's be honest, anything Cleveland, unless it's the tribe, you're kind of out these days. Cleveland knowledge has dropped. You haven't lived here in 20 years, right?
That's right, 25.
Right, so there you go.
I know about Legacy Village.
Please, that place sucks. It does. What's good over there?
Don't they have Cheesecake Factory over there?
Pinecrest, baby. Come on.
Hey, Harvard Road, represent.
That's right.
But yeah, but seriously, all these guys hitting triple digits, it's just, it is, it's, you know, the Indians for years, like we said, and I know Andrew Miller used to throw really hard and so did Cody Allen, but then it kind of dropped off for a while. But now with all this swinging and missing that's going on in baseball, that's how you're going to win. And hopefully Class A is fresh for tonight. Hopefully we get to him and have a lead. And it's nice. This bullpen's good. It really is good.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I really am, you know, when you have, I've said this to you many times and we've discussed it, there is nothing that can kill a season quite like a bad bullpen can. But it looks like the Indians have a lot of really good arms and options out there when you have a lead. And listen, you're not going to be perfect, and they're going to blow leads from time to time. Closers blow leads, they're going to blow saves. You know, the firemen roll, sometimes they blow leads, whatever. I'll take my chances with this pitching. You know, give me six innings from the starter and mixing and matching with those three guys. And I still believe Phil Maton will get a shot there. And, you know, Brian Shaw continues to pitch the way he has. That's great, too. You're gonna have a lot of options. I think you'll see more Maton and Oliver Perez coming up, you know, as we get deeper into the season, and probably this week, because like you said before, there were three off days, you know, sandwiched between the opener and the Friday game against the Tigers this weekend. So, you know, now the Indians are basically have one off day between now and April 28th. So everyone's going to have to be used. Tristan McKenzie's finally going to get a start or two starts this week. But again, this bullpen, I'll take my chances with them. They look really good and really deep so far.
And we didn't even talk about Trevor Stephan, who also throws 97, 98. So I know he gave up a home run the other night, but he throws hard. And it's kind of the way the baseball is going right now. All right, so good shape through 8 games, 5-3. This will be a tough week this week. And I know the White Sox don't have Tim Anderson. He's out, which is a huge break for the Indians. And also Eloy Jimenez is going to be out for months. But I was doing a little scouting of the White Sox yesterday. They lost 4-3 to the Royals. Again, Kansas City scored the run in the 10th off of Crochet, where they start the runner at second base to start the 10th inning. It's just
dumbish.
It is just so minor league. I guess it speeds games up, you know, but
I guess, but like, it's like you said, it's so minor league. Like, what did that team do to deserve to have a runner on second base? It's just, and I know it goes both ways. I just think it's so stupid.
Like, I could see, you're right. Like, even yesterday, what happened was the Royals, so Carlos hits a homer to tie it, sends it to extra innings in Chicago. They start the 10th with Michael Taylor at second. Nicky Lopez. Nicky Lopez bunts Taylor over. So they walk Merrifield, which is the right move. But, like, if the whole point of putting a runner on second is to gain more action, you took the bat out of your best hitter's hands. Whit Merrifield's a god. That guy's damn good. So now it's first and third. But then Benintendi with a safety squeeze and Crochet threw the ball away. And that's how they scored. So I guess from the MLB standpoint, it's, hey, look at this action we created. Two bunts, you know? But you're right. What did Kansas City really do?
I get it. They want to. I understand that, and they want to speed up the games, and they're, you know. But But listen, am I a baseball purist of sorts? Yes, and so are you. I hate it, and I hate 7-inning doubleheaders. I just think it cheapens the game.
I hate that a guy like Crochet, who's really good for the White Sox, the lefty throws like 100. But what did he really do? And yeah, he made the error. But, like, you're right. He took the loss. What did he really do? That runner on second had nothing to do with him. It wasn't his fault.
It was a game last year with James Karinchak.
Same
he
thing.
Got the loss, and it was basically like they bunted the guy over, and the next guy hit a sack fly, and he didn't give up a hit and got no and didn't allow a base runner, and he was a losing pitcher. Ridiculous.
All right, so let's talk about this week. So the White Sox for 4 games in Chicago. We've got 3 night games, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then the Thursday 2:05 special. We'll run down the pitching matchups. And then Friday night against Cincinnati, Saturday 4 o'clock game against the Reds, and then Sunday the usual 1:10. The White Sox are 4-5 to start the year. They started the year out west, if I recall, playing the Angels. And the Reds are actually playing pretty good baseball, as they are in first place at 6-3. But they're out west right now. They played Arizona and now San Francisco. So tonight, as you mentioned, Todd, Tristan McKenzie will get two starts tonight against Carlos Rodon, who's had his moments against the Indians. He's been either like feast or famine. So that's a lefty. Tuesday's game is a must watch. Shane Bieber against Lucas Giolito.
Nice.
Those are two of the better pitchers in the game. Wednesday, Zach Plesac against Dallas Keuchel, so another left-hander. And then Thursday afternoon, Aaron Civale against Cy Lynn, Lance Lynn. That guy's like complete game shutout in his first start.
I gotta say that I was very hard on him for a long time, and I always said, oh, this guy, he's Ryan Dempster, he's Kyle Loesch, one of these guys who goes, you know, he's a National League pitcher for when he was on the Cardinals. Typical National League guy, you get him the American League and he'll be nothing more than a fifth starter. Well, he's throwing harder than he's ever thrown. He was great with the Rangers, who held him too long, in my opinion. And now he's a big free agent signing, and it'll be interesting to see how the Indians handle a hard throwing righty who they really have not faced yet. Who's the best starting pitcher the Indians have faced so far? I mean, they really haven't faced anybody with any sort of pedigree, so. That should be interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, and Giolito is really good, and Lance Lynn, like I said, his first start was masterpiece. Then they go to Cincinnati. Logan Allen will pitch on Friday night against right-hander Jeff Hoffman. Do you know who that is?
No, I don't. Jeff Hoffman? Never heard of it. Yeah. How's that? Like Billy Bear, never heard of it.
Right. So that's Friday night. McKenzie against Jose De Leon. Not the Jose De Leon from many years ago. But, look, the Reds have lost pitchers. So
Jose
now.
De Leon was a top, former top 100 prospect, though.
Yes.
He's had Tommy John in the last 2 years. I know that.
Yeah. So. And then Shane Bieber against Wade Miley, the lefty, on Sunday. Now, if the Reds wanted to, they could move. They could move Luis. They could move Luis Castillo up because they have an off day. On Wednesday, they could move him if he pitches Tuesday. He's pitching tomorrow against the Giants. So I don't know if they'll move him up, but right now, if they go in order and stay in order, it'll be Hoffman, De Leon, and Miley over the weekend. So, let's see if the bats can get a little bit more consistent.
Tell you what. I know we're talking about, we want more consistency and we'd like to see them string hits together, but the way they're powering the ball with the home run ball, were they third in the AL or third in the majors in home runs hit so far? And I would be remiss if I didn't bring up the fact that I think I've learned that Franmil Reyes' game ascension is the key to this offense.
Yep, really is.
What he has done in the last four or five games, it's not a coincidence that the Indians have won all those games. Because when you have the right... How many years and years and years did we talk about the right-handed power bat? This guy is so legit. And when he gets hot, like he had that hot streak last year, it just gives the offense such a different dynamic because you can't pitch around Jose Ramirez when Eddie Rosario and Franmil Reyes are the next two guys. And adding Eddie Rosario, I know he's off to a little bit of a slow start, but adding him is just another professional hitter behind Jose Ramirez is such – an important aspect of lengthening this lineup. And, but Reyes's ascension and him staying hot is probably going to be the difference between this team going and getting back to October baseball and not. So
what are they going to do over the weekend? Where is he going to play?
I think, he took some fly balls and played a little bit of right field during spring. It wouldn't surprise me if you saw Naylor at first and Reyes in right field because you can't, maybe they'll sit him one game, but you're not going to sit him. He's, he's your best power bat. He's hot. You're not going to sit him, which, by the way, Major League Baseball not getting their act together for the universal DH.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Just the dumbest of the dumb.
Yeah. I mean, you still have paying customers, okay? And you're going to have plenty of people. I would think there'd be some Indians fans in Southern Ohio. Is there a chance on Saturday I could convince my daughter to come with me to Cincinnati? I don't know.
Now we're talking.
I don't know. I've done so much driving.
I was going to say, I don't, I,
But it's an outside shot. But I will ask, and I would go. Saturday at 4 o'clock is it wets my whistle. But like, if I go, I want to see Franmil Reyes bat. I don't want to see Tristan McKenzie bat. Sorry, that's so stupid, so stupid. So, all right, brother. Well, we'll see how they do. Great show. It was a lot of fun as always, and we'll do it. That's right. We'll do it again next week, Les. We'll do it.
Oh, man. I love that, man. I miss him so much. He's the greatest.
I texted Allison last night and just said, how about that sweep? Because I know she's still watching. And
she loves the Indians.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, all right, my friend, we're brought to you by Center for Advanced Dentistry. Breaking Tea t-shirts at BreakingTea.com/dairy. Use the promo code TribeCast10 to get 10% off. And our friends at WaitingForNextYear.com. There is no bigger Tribe fan. There's no bigger Tribe slappy than Craig Lindell.
What are you talking about? come on. God bless that man.
I love Craig. I can't bust his chops a little bit. He's very negative on Twitter.
We'll have to have him on, or he'll have to have us on his podcast to discuss his gripes with ownership. And I don't think he has gripes with the
I'm just busting.
He has gripes with ownership, yeah, which many Indians fans do.
That's right. We went 46 minutes without saying the word Dolan.
I know, pretty good. And we didn't mention, I only mentioned the redacted ex-shortstop, didn't call him by his name, sticking to the moratorium. Is there anything else we weren't allowed to talk about?
How's that batting average, speaking of the moratorium?
I refuse to even look. Oh. I don't want to look.
Well, look low. Look low. All right. We'll talk to you again next week, everybody.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.